When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Jay Horowitz, special edition of Amazing Conversations with my old friend, Barry Lyons. Barry, thank you for doing this. I appreciate it. Good seeing you again.
Thank you, Jay, for having me. Great to see you, and look forward to seeing you at the number ceremonies coming up this season.
Barry, you know, what do you think you and I have in common that people might not know about? One characteristic, you and I are almost the same. We both have big heads.
Yeah, big head.
My nickname growing up was Elephant Head. I remember the guys used to call you Mallet Head. Am I correct?
Mallet Head, Mallet, whatever. There was all kinds of names that...
I hate head jokes, Barry.
Yeah, Lee Mazzilli started that in spring training 1 year, and it's kind of stuck. And there were various variations of it over the years.
Yeah, me too, Barry. I'm a size 8 7/8 to 8 3/8 head. But listen, let me ask you this. 86 Met, what do you think endeared you to Daryl Strawberry and Dwight Gooden as you're invited to post-ceremony number retirement? Dwight, April 14th, number 16. Daryl, June 1st, number 18. I mean, what do you think was in you that you were able to bond with those guys so good?
Well, Dwight and I were in the same draft in 82. Of course, he was a first-round pick, and I was a 15th-round pick. But we met in instructional league that year, and we became close pretty much right away. He's a genuinely good person with a big heart and a big smile, and we got to know each other. I caught him in spring training some, caught him a little bit in that incredible year he had in Lynchburg.
Yeah, we were a little bit in 83, right? Yeah,
yes, I did briefly. Okay. And but as far as Daryl's concerned, I saw Daryl play in Jackson, Mississippi in 1982 when he was in Double A. From Mississippi, and heard all about the towering home runs he hit into the pine trees beyond the outfield fence. And later on, once I was in the organization, we met and became very close. They're just really two good guys. And as a team player, I was a backup to Gary Carter most of my career in New York. And I think those guys respected the way I went about my business and, kept my mouth shut and did what I could do when I was called upon. And So anyway, a lot of things that brought us together, and they're just two great guys.
Well, you told me a story, Barry, a little while ago, that in 2011, it's the 25th anniversary of the 86 team, that Daryl really helped turn your life around. Could you explain a little bit?
He did. The partying lifestyle that I certainly freely and chose to participate in over the years in baseball. And that lifestyle eventually led to an addiction for me that I battled for many years. But after Hurricane Katrina in 2005, my addiction spiraled out of control, and I really had a...
You lost a lot in Hurricane, right?
Lost quite a bit and had depression and devastation in my life. And my addictions really spiraled out of control from that point. But fast forward 6 years to 2011, we had the 25th anniversary of the Mets 1986 World Series championship. And that weekend, I saw Daryl in a whole different light. He had been sober for a few years at that point, and he and his wife, Tracy, were really beginning what now is an amazing ministry. But Daryl had a glow about him. He had a peace about him that I hadn't seen in many, many years. And I wanted that. And we talked a little bit that weekend, and he informed me that he had given his life to Christ and that he had really changed for the better and had been free from alcohol and drugs for a few years at that point. But ultimately, about 3 months later, I finally surrendered, and I have been 12 plus years now alcohol free, and it's been a change in my life that Daryl was instrumental in leading me there. And then together, Daryl and I have been, you know, working behind the scenes and trying to help others to free themselves from the addiction and from that lifestyle. I just saw something different. I saw a glow around Daryl. I saw a peace that, you know, it's hard to describe, but when someone is at peace, someone has that that spiritual connection to the Lord, it's all over their face. You know, they don't have to say it. I just saw it. And I sensed that that's something that I wanted. And he encouraged me and shared with me, you know, what changes in his life that he made. And you know, it took a little while longer for me to come to the realization and to surrender, is the way I like to call it. Like I said, it's been a huge blessing for me. And I just am so thankful for Daryl and his walk with the Lord and all that he's doing to help other people.
Dwight told me too that you were a good counselor for him too, when he was going through his problems, without being really specific. I mean, how did you bond with Daryl with that kind of stuff too?
Well, we've, you know, together been praying for Doc for several years. I mean, Doc has, you know, in my opinion, I don't know all the details, but Doc has had years of sobriety and has fallen off and sort of been riding that roller coaster over the years. And we've been, you know, sort of communicating back and forth and thinking of ways and praying for Dwight that one day he could be totally free of it. And, we've reached out to Dwight. I've been with Dwight the last 10 years or so at Mets Fantasy Camp, and we've talked quite a bit. We've become really close over the years. We were, you know, the three of us were good friends, certainly from day one, but over the last 10 years, our relationship has really bonded and grown in a way that it's just a blessing for me to be in contact with them on a regular basis to see the good things that they're doing, Daryl in ministry and Dwight all in the community of New York and New Jersey. He is such a both of them are really humble guys that had the
with
world.
Big hearts too.
Big hearts, huge hearts, and always have had it. And, you know, they had great careers. You know, a lot of people want to talk about the things they didn't do or the things that could have been, but both of them had tremendous careers that anyone would give a right arm to have. And, you know, they don't need to be shortchanged. And I'm so thankful that Steve and Alex Cohen are recognizing them and doing this and placing them in an esteemed position within the Mets organization. They certainly deserve it. They've earned it, and now, thankfully, they're getting their due recognition for an amazing careers. And they were the face of the Mets in the 80s. I love Gary Carter and Keith Hernandez, and obviously they were great players, great leaders. But Daryl Strawberry and Dwight Gooden were what the New York Mets represented to the world and to the country and to baseball and to Major League Baseball. They were the faces of our team.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, Barrett, let me touch on your career for a second. You come up as a, you know, for a 15th round pick. But really, from 83 to 86, you hit almost 300 every year in the minors. But then, December of 84, the Mets acquire Gary Carter for five players. I know you and Gary were good friends, but what was your first reaction? You were actually the MVP of the South Atlantic League in 84. What was your first reaction when you heard about the trade?
Yeah, that was the Carolina League, actually.
Yes,
some places have it incorrectly, but the Carolina League, and I just come off a great season, my first full season in the Mets organization. And, you know, it was then I knew I was going to be a big league player. It was always my dream, but it was a hope and something I aspired to. But, you know, until you get there, you don't get there. But I knew, and I coming off a great season, that off season, I was just really full of excitement and hope. And I didn't know that I would be in the big leagues in 85. I wasn't necessarily ready for that at that point, but I knew that one day sooner than later I would be. But I was actually at a friend's house watching Monday Night Football.
I was too. That's why I met him.
And all of a sudden on the screen, it flashes up and they start talking. The New York Mets acquired all-star catcher Gary Carter for,
five, Hubie Brooks, Floyd.
And I was just floored. I didn't know what to say. My friend looked at me and we just kind of looked at each other and it was like, holy.
Yeah. God.
But anyway, you know, I pretty much looked at it as a positive right off the bat. Excuse me. Even though Gary, unfortunately for me, was a roadblock in my career, but I wouldn't change one thing. I loved being a part of the New York Mets in the 1980s. I loved my teammates. I loved New York City. I loved everything about being a New York Met. Unfortunately, I didn't get to play as much as I would have liked, but I accepted that role and I prepared just like a starting pitcher. I get one shot a week. Sometimes I was fortunate to maybe get two starts in some weeks, but I cherished the role. I did the best I could. I really bonded with our pitching staff and became really close with all of our pitchers. And, you know, I think all the players, I was the one guy that, you know, pitchers usually hung out with pitchers and position players usually hung out with position players. And there were some cross mingling in there. We were all close, but I was able to be a part of both groups. And I think that's what endeared me to all of my teammates and the role that I played and the way I went about it.
Barry, in 86, you get two starts. You could have come up and is that the year you broke your arm or your elbow?
It is. I made the team out of spring training.
Right.
Was there for the first month, had a couple of starts, two wins, had an RBI in each game. But, you know, we were off to a great start, and I had jumped from double A to triple A. I mean, from double A to the big league. So I needed some at-bats. They sent me down to get some at-bats and to play at Tidewater in middle of May or latter part of May. And called up Ed Hearn, and Ed got several opportunities, more so than I did, and he took advantage of it. He did really well. He played well, hit a couple home runs.
August, September, so there, it would have been another spot for you, right, man?
Yeah, but in August that year, I came up for a few weeks in the middle of the summer when Hojo got hurt, and we carried three catchers. But then when he came back, I went back down, and August 3rd or August 2nd, I suffered a broken right forearm in Pawtucket against the Red Sox, nonetheless, and ended my season. And 2 days later, Gary busted his thumb, tore ligaments in his thumb, and was out for 3 weeks or so.
Yeah,
and
timing wasn't great for you, Barry.
No, it was very disappointing, to say the least, but anyway, it is what it is, and it was hard pill to swallow, but life deals you all kinds of things, and I was just glad to be a part of the organization.
But eventually, you did get a ring a couple of years later, right? I mean,
yes, 9 years later, Randy Myers led the effort to
get some of those good. But you stuck around for a couple of postseason games, right? I mean, were you there for the World Series? I forget.
Yes, I did come up for the 86 World Series games, 6 and 7. I was in New York and with
them.
I was a part of the celebration and had a big night the night before. And while I probably could have been in the parade had I showed up, unfortunately, due to the late night, and I went back to my hotel room, and I didn't wake up. Doc got a lot of publicity for not making the parade.
Yeah.
Of course, he was looked upon and expected to be there. I could have been there, but unfortunately, I was in my hotel room asleep when I woke up and the parade was on TV. So unfortunately, I missed the parade as well.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
So how does it feel to be known as the man who ended Tom Seaver's pitching career? Let me give the fans the background. In 87, Tom was attempting a comeback with a simulated game in Norfolk, not Tidewater. You went 6-for-6 against Tom that day. And in his press conference that day, he said, if Barry Lyons goes 6-for-6 against me, it's time to call it quits.
Well, I have obviously total and utmost respect for Tom Seaver and the great pitcher he was. But obviously at this point in his career, he wasn't, quote unquote, the Tom Seaver. But we had a couple of simulated games with him, one in Montreal after he pitched at Tidewater. And Dave Maggot and Tim Tuffle, Bill Allman, who was a reserve infielder, and myself were the sort of the guinea pigs that had the bat off of him early before BP. And we hit him pretty good up in Montreal. And then 4 or 5 days later back at Shea, I remember rushing in and I was not late, but it was late for me. I wasn't there early. And I came in the clubhouse and Uncle Bill Robinson's like, let's go, let's go. So I got dressed real quick. And I just jokingly said to Bill, I said, I hate to end this guy's career, but, you know, he's in trouble today. And, lo and behold, I had no clue what his situation was, what he was thinking, but I hit a couple line drives first two times up, and then the third time he threw one under my chin, knocked me on my rear.
That's funny. That was Tom, though.
Your old buddy Rob Drummerhauser was catching, our bullpen catcher. But the next pitch, I hit it in the bullpen. I hit a home run off of him. So
Thompson, that was it.
By then, I think he kind of knew that it wasn't meant to be. And 2 days later or whatever, they had the press conference announcing his retirement.
And Tom was a good guy, really good guy. Miss him.
Yeah, I hated that he wouldn't join us, but obviously. I had no ill will or no intentions of ending his career, but in some ways, I guess that was the final straw.
Bob, what you tell the people what you're doing now? You have to bring pro ball back to Biloxi, your hometown. You're kind of an ambassador. You were manager for a little bit with the Biloxi Shuckers.
Biloxi Shuckers. It's a double-A franchise, actually, with the Milwaukee Brewers. Right. I met David Stearns down here in Biloxi a few years back when he came down to see some of his prospects. And now, of course, the president of operations for the Mets. But it was something that came to me, a vision, a hope for me late in my career. And I led the effort and worked for 20 plus years to bring minor league baseball to my hometown, and I'm forever thankful for that. I get double-A baseball literally in the neighborhood I grew up in, a beautiful ballpark overlooking the Gulf of Mexico here on the Biloxi Peninsula. It's it's a little slice of heaven at home, and I get to go out and enjoy the home games.
You work for the team, right? You're kind of an ambassador kind of role.
I'm an ambassador. I do a little broadcasting. I do a lot of interviews for social media and stuff for the team. I represent the team in the community and speaking engagements and charity appearances and things of that nature. So I'm involved, but not on the field. I'm more in the community and in the stands.
Barry, when you go out speaking, you tell your story, the sobriety part of it, or you go in again?
Yes, I've been fortunate to be able to share my testimony many, many times over the years. After COVID, the numbers of opportunity have sort of, taken a downturn, but I still love sharing the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ. I love sharing and using baseball as a platform, but I have such great memories and fondness for New York City, for the New York Mets, for the organization, and all of my time there. I love sharing it. I'm so excited to be coming back as guests of Daryl and Dwight. It means the world to me, and it means the world to us teammates of Daryl and Dwight that they are finally honored and recognized in such a way. And it's a blessing for them. And I think it's going to be two amazing weekends. And I'm so, so thankful to be a part of them.
I get this question a lot, Barry. Tell me how to respond. Do you think that Daryl and Doc's careers, they should have been, because they should be in the Hall of Fame. But my response is, What they're doing now is really more important than any Hall of Fame. I mean, do you agree with that?
I agree with that 100%, Jay. I think that is very, very wonderful perspective and viewpoint on them. And I defend them, and I don't have to defend them. They're what they did on the field speaks for itself. They were dynamic superstar players. And they had great careers. Yes, if you want to look at it from a negative angle, you can question some of the things that happened and they did and some of the choices they made. But all in all, they're doing great things. They're helping people out all over the country, all over the world. They're using their story to help others and to be shining lights in what otherwise is a dark world. And Daryl and Dwight both deserve this honor. They are truly two superstar players, but they are superstar persons. Their hearts are big and always have been. Their appreciation for teammates and people that have helped them along the way is awesome. They're good people.
Like Daryl always says to me, not everybody is meant to be in a Hall of Fame. It can be a Hall of Fame person.
Yes.
Trying to do, and Dwight the same thing, you know.
I'm thrilled to share this and speak with you today, Jay. You're a Hall of Famer in all of our minds, brother.
I will look forward to seeing you mid-April before, and be well and have a safe trip. And thanks for the time, Barry. Appreciate you.
Jay, thank you. I love you, my friend.
Love you too,
we'll
Barry.
See you soon, buddy.